his cousins mean to challenge. The rest of us have come only to watch.
Relieved, Dunk thanked the White Knights for their kindness and rode out through the castle gates before another prince should think to accost him.
Three princelings, he pondered as he turned the palfrey toward the streets of Ashford Town.
Valar was the eldest son of Prince Baylor, second in line to the Iron Throne, but Dunk did not know how much of his father's fabled prowess with lance and sword he might have inherited. About the other Targaryen princes, he knew even less.
What will I do if I have to ride against a prince? Will I even be allowed to challenge one so highborn?
He did not know the answer. The old man had often said he was thick as a castle wall, and just now he felt it. Henley liked the look of Sweetfoot well enough until he heard Dunk wanted to sell her. Then all the stableman could see in her were faults. He offered 300 silvers. Dunk said he must have 3,000. After much arguing and cursing, they settled at 750 silver stags. That was a deal closer to Henley's starting price than to Dunk's, which made him feel the loser in the tilt. But the stableman would go no higher, so in the end, he had no choice but to yield. A second argument began when Dunk declared that the price did not include the saddle, and Henley insisted that it had. Finally, it was all settled. As Henley left to fetch his coin, Dunk stroked Sweetfoot's mane and told her to be brave.
If I win, I'll come back and buy you again, I promise.
He had no doubt that all the palfrey's flaws would vanish in the intervening days, and she would be worth twice what she was today. The stableman gave him 3 gold pieces and the rest in silver. Dunk bit one of the gold coins and smiled. He had never tasted gold before, nor handled it. Dragons, men called the coins, since they were stamped with the 3-headed dragon of House Targaryen on one side. The other bore the likeness of the king. 2 of the coins Henley gave him had King Daron's face. The 3rd was older, well-worn, and showed a different man. His name was there under his head, but Dunk could not read the letters. Gold had been shaved off its edges, too, he saw. He pointed this out to Henley, and loudly. The stableman grumbled, but handed over another few silvers and a fistful of coppers to make up the weight. Dunk handed a few of the coppers right back and nodded at Sweetfoot.
That's for her, he said. See that she has some oats tonight. Aye, and an apple too.
With the shield on his arm and the sack of old armor slung over his shoulder, Dunk set out on foot through the sunny streets of Ashford Town. The heft of all that coin in his pouch made him feel queer, almost giddy on one hand and anxious on the other. The old man had never trusted him with more than a coin or two at a time. He could live a year on this much money.
And what will I do when it's gone? Sell Thunder?
That road ended in beggary or outlawry.
This chance will never come again. I must risk all.
By the time he splashed back across the ford to the south bank of the Cockleswent, the morning was almost done and the tourney grounds had come to life once more. The wine sellers and sausage makers were doing a brisk trade. A dancing bear was shuffling along to his master's playing as a singer sang the bear, and the maiden fair. Jugglers were juggling, and the puppeteers were just finishing another fight. Dunk stopped to watch the wooden dragon slain. When the puppet knight cut its head off and the red sawdust spilled out onto the grass, he laughed aloud and threw the girl 2 coppers.
One for last night, he called.
She caught the coins in the air and threw him back a smile as sweet as any he had ever seen.
Is it me she smiles at or the coins?
Dunk had never been with a girl, and they made him nervous. Once 3 years passed, when the old man's purse was full after 1/2 a year in the service of blind Lord Florent, he'd told Dunk the time had come to take him to a brothel and make him a man. He'd been drunk, though, and when he was sober, he did not remember. Dunk had been too embarrassed to remind him. He was not certain he wanted a whore anyway. If he could not have a high-born maiden like a proper knight, he wanted one who at least liked him more than his silver.
Will you drink a horn of ale?
He asked the puppet girl as she was scooping the sawdust blood back into her dragon.
With me, I mean. or a sausage? I had a sausage last night, and it was good. They're made with pork, I think.
I thank you, my lord, but we have another show.
The girl rose and ran off to the fierce, fat Dornish woman who worked the puppet night while Dunk stood there feeling stupid. He liked the way she ran, though.
A pretty girl and tall. I would not have to kneel to kiss that one.
He knew how to kiss. A tavern girl had showed him one night in Lannisport a year ago, but she'd been so short she had to sit on the table to reach his lips. The memory made his ears burn. What a great fool he was. It was jousting he should be thinking about, not kissing. Lord Ashford's carpenters were whitewashing the waist-high wooden barriers that would separate the jousters. Dunk watched them work a while. There were 5 lanes, arrayed north to south, so none of the competitors would ride with the sun in his eyes. A 3-tiered viewing stand had been raised on the eastern side of the lists, with an orange canopy to shield the lords and ladies from rain and sun. Most would sit on benches, but 4 high-backed chairs had been erected in the center of the platform for Lord Ashford, the fair maid, and the visiting princes. On the eastern verge of the meadow, a quinton had been set up and 12 knights were tilting at it, sending the pole arms spinning every time they struck the splintered shield suspended from one end. Dunk watched the brute of Bracken take his turn, and then Lord Caron of the Marches.
I do not have as good a seat as any of them, he thought uneasily.
Elsewhere, men were training afoot, going at each other with wooden swords, while their squires stood shouting ribald advice. Dunk watched a stocky youth try to hold off a muscular knight, who seemed lithe and quick as a mountain cat. Both had the red apple of the Fossaways painted on their shields, but the younger man's was soon hacked and chipped to pieces.
"Here's an apple that's not ripe yet," the older said as he slammed the other's helm.
The younger Fossaway was bruised and bloody by the time he yielded, but his foe was hardly winded. He raised his visor, looked about, saw Dunk, and said,
"You there! Yes, you, the big one. Knight of the Winged Chalice. Is that a long sword you wear?"
"It is mine by rights," Dunk said defensively. "I am Sir Duncan the Tall."
"And I, Sir Stephen Fossaway. Would you care to try me, Sir Duncan the Tall? It would be good to have someone new to cross swords with. My cousin's not ripe yet, as you've seen."
"Do it, Sir Duncan,"
urged the beaten Fossaway as he removed his helm.
"I may not be ripe, but my good cousin's rotten to the core. Knock the seeds out of him."
Dunk shook his head. Why were these lordlings involving him in their quarrel? He wanted no part of it.
"I thank you, sir, but I have matters to attend."
He was uncomfortable carrying so much coin. The sooner he paid Steely Pate and got his armor, the happier he would be. Sir Stephen looked at him scornfully.
"The hedge knight has matters."
He glanced about and found another likely opponent loitering nearby.
"Sir Grants, well met. Come try me. I know every feeble trick my cousin Raymond has mastered. And it seems that Sir Duncan needs to return to the hedges. Come, come."
Dunk stalked away red-faced. He did not have many tricks himself, feeble or otherwise, and he did not want anyone to see him fight until the tourney. The old man always said that the better you knew your foe, the easier it was to best him. Knights like Sir Stephen had sharp eyes to find a man's weakness at a glance. Dunk was strong and quick, and his weight and reach were in his favor. But he did not believe for a moment that his skills were the equal of these others. Sir Arlen had taught him as best he could, but the old man had never been the greatest of knights, even when young. Great knights did not live their lives in the hedges, or die by the side of a muddy road.
"That will not happen to me," Dunk vowed. "I will show them that I can be more than a hedge knight."
"Sir Duncan,"
the younger Fossaway hurried to catch him.
"I should not have urged you to try my cousin. I was angry with his arrogance, and you're so large, I thought. Well, it was wrong of me. You wear no armor. He would have broken your hand if he could, or knee. He likes to batter men in the training yard so they will be bruised and vulnerable later, should he meet them in the lists." He did not break you?
No, but I am his own blood. Though his is the senior branch of the apple tree, as he never ceases to remind me. I am Raymond Fossaway.
Well met. Will you and your cousin ride in the tourney?
He will, for a certainty. As to me, would that I could. I am only a squire as yet. My cousin has promised to knight me, but insists that I am not ripe yet.
Raymond had a square face, a pug nose, and short woolly hair, but his smile was engaging.
You have the look of a challenger, it seems to me. Whose shield do you mean to strike?
It makes no difference, said Dunk.
That was what you were supposed to say, though it made all the difference in the world.
I will not enter the lists until the third day.
And by then some of the champions will have fallen, yes?
Raymond said.
Well, may the warrior smile on you, sir.
And you?
If he is only a squire, what business do I have being a knight? One of us is a fool.
The silver in Dunk's pouch clinked with every step, but he could lose it all in a heartbeat, he knew. Even the rules of this tourney worked against him, making it very unlikely that he would face a green or feeble foe. There were a dozen different forms a tourney might follow, according to the whim of the lord who hosted it. Some were mock battles between teams of knights. Others, wild melees where the glory went to the last fighter left standing, where individual combats were the rule. Pairings were sometimes determined by lot, and sometimes by the master of the games. Lord Ashford was staging this tourney to celebrate his daughter's 13th name day. The fair maid would sit by her father's side as the reigning queen of love and beauty. Five champions wearing her favors would defend her. All others must perforce be challengers. But any man who could defeat one of the champions would take his place and stand as a champion himself, until such time as another challenger unseated him. At the end of the 3 days of jousting, the five who remained would determine whether the fair maid would retain the crown of love and beauty, or whether another would wear it in her place. Dunk stared at the grassy lists and the empty chairs on the viewing stand and pondered his chances. One victory was all he needed. Then he could name himself one of the champions of Ashford Meadow, if only for an hour. The old man had lived nigh on 60 years and had never been a champion.
It is not too much to hope for if the gods are good.
He thought back on all the songs he had heard, songs of blind Simeon Star Eyes and noble Serwin of the Mirror Shield, of Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight, Sir Ryam Redwine, and Florian the Fool. They had all won victories against foes far more terrible than any he would face.
But they were great heroes, brave men of noble birth, except for Florian. And what am I?
Dunk of Fleabottom? Or Sir Duncan the Tall?
He supposed he would learn the truth of that soon enough. He hefted the sack of armor and turned his feet toward the merchant's stalls in search of Steely Pate. Egg had worked manfully at the campsite. Dunk was pleased. He had been half afraid his squire would run off again.
Did you get a good price for your palfrey?
The boy asked.
How did you know I'd sold her? You rode off and walked back, and if robbers had stolen her, you'd be more angry than you are.
I got enough for this.
Dunk took out his new armor to show the boy.
If you're ever to be a knight, you'll need to know good steel from bad. Look here. This is fine work. This mail is double chain, each link bound to two others, see? It gives more protection than single chain. And the helm? Pate's rounded the top. See how it curves? A sword or an axe will slide off, where they might bite through a flat-topped helm.
Dunk lowered the great helm over his head.
How does it look?
There's no visor,
Egg pointed out.
There's air holes. Visors are points of weakness.
Steely Pate had said as much.
If you knew how many knights have taken an arrow in the eye as they lifted their visor for a suck of cool air, you'd never want one, he'd told Dunk.
There's no crest either, said Egg. It's just plain.
Dunk lifted off the helm.
Plain is fine for the likes of me. See how bright the steel is? It will be your task to keep it that way. You know how to scour mail?
In a barrel of sand, said the boy. But you don't have a barrel. Did you buy a pavilion too, sir?
I didn't get that good a price.
The boy is too bold for his own good. I ought to beat that out of him. He knew he would not, though. He liked the boldness. He needed to be bolder himself.
My squire is braver than I am, and more clever. You did well here, Egg, Dunk told him. On the morrow, you'll come with me. Have a look at the tourney grounds. We'll buy oats for the horses and fresh bread for ourselves. Maybe a bit of cheese as well. They were selling good cheese at one of the stalls.
I won't need to go into the castle, will I?
Why not? One day, I mean to live in a castle. I hope to win a place above the salt before I'm done.
The boy said nothing.
Perhaps he fears to enter a lord's hall, Dunk reflected. That's no more than might be expected. He will grow out of it in time.
He went back to admiring his armor and wondering how long he would wear it. Sir Manfred was a thin man with a sour look on his face. He wore a black surcoat slashed with the purple lightning of House Dundarian, but Dunk would have remembered him anyway by his unruly mane of red-gold hair.
Sir Arlen served your lord father when he and Lord Caron burned the Vulture King out of the Red Mountain, sir, he said from one knee. I was only a boy then, but I squired for him. Sir Arlen of Pennytree.
Sir Manfred scowled.
No, I know him not. Nor you, boy.
Dunk showed him the old man's shield.
This was his sigil, the winged chalice.
My lord father took 800 knights and near 4,000 foot into the mountains. I cannot be expected to remember every one of them, nor what shields they carried. It may be that you are with us, but...
Sir Manfred shrugged. Dunk was struck speechless for an instant.
The old man took a wound in your father's service. How can you have forgotten him? They will not allow me to challenge unless some knight or lord will vouch for me.
And what is that to me? Said Sir Manfred. I've given you enough of my time, sir.
If he went back to the castle without Sir Manfred, he was lost. Dunk eyed the purple lightning embroidered across the black wool of Sir Manfred's surcoat and said,
I remember your father telling the camp how your house got its sigil. One stormy night, as the first of your line bore a message across the Dornish marches, an arrow killed his horse beneath him and spilled him to the ground. Two Dornishmen came out of the darkness in ringmail and crested helms. His sword had broken beneath him when he fell. When he saw that, he thought he was doomed. But as the Dornishmen closed to cut him down, lightning cracked from the sky. It was a bright, burning purple, and it split, striking the Dornishmen in their steel and killing them both where they stood. The message gave the Storm King victory over the Dornish, and in thanks he raised the messenger to lordship. He was the first Lord Dundarian. So he took for his arms a forked purple lightning bolt on a black field powdered with stars.
If Dunk thought the tale would impress Sir Manfred, he could not have been more wrong.
Every potboy and groom who has ever served my father hears that story soon or late. Knowing it does not make you a knight. Be gone with you, sir.
It was with a leaden heart that Dunk returned to Ashford Castle, wondering what he might say so that Plummer would grant him the right of challenge. The steward was not in his turret chamber, however. A guard told him that he might be found in the great hall.
Shall I wait here?
Dunk said.
How long will he be?
How should I know? Do what you please.
The great hall was not so great as halls went, but Ashford was a small castle. Dunk entered through a side door and spied the steward at once. He was standing with Lord Ashford and a dozen other men at the top of the hall. He walked toward them, beneath a wall hung with wool tapestries of fruits and flowers.
More concerned if they were your sons, I'll wager,
an angry man was saying as Dunk approached. His straight hair and square-cut beard were so fair they seemed white in the dimness of the hall, but as he got closer,
he saw that they were in truth a pale silvery color touched with gold.
"Daron has done this before,"
another replied. Plummer was standing so as to block Dunk's view of the speaker.
"You should never have commanded him to enter the lists. He belongs on a tourney field no more than Ares does or Ragel."
"By which you mean he'd sooner ride a whore than a horse?"
the first man said. Thickly built and powerful, the prince, he was surely a prince, wore a leather brigandine covered with silver studs beneath a heavy black cloak trimmed with ermine. Pox scars marked his cheeks, only partly concealed by his silvery beard.
"I do not need to be reminded of my son's failings, brother. He has only 18 years. He can change. He will change, gods be damned. Or I swear I'll see him dead."
"Don't be an utter fool. Daron is what he is, but he is still your blood and mine. I have no doubt Sir Roland will turn him up and Aegon with him.
When the tourney is over, perhaps. Arion is here. He is a better lance than Daron in any case, if it is the tourney that concerns you."
Dunk could see the speaker now. He was seated in the high seat, a sheaf of parchments in one hand, Lord Ashford hovering at his shoulder. Even seated, he looked to be a head taller than the other, to judge from the long, straight legs stretched out before him. His short-cropped hair was dark and peppered with gray, his strong jaw clean-shaven. His nose looked as though it had been broken more than once. Though he was dressed very plainly, in green doublet, brown mantle, and scuffed boots, there was a weight to him, a sense of power and certainty. It came to Dunk that he had walked in on something that he ought never have heard.
"I had best go and come back later when they are done,"
he decided. But it was already too late. The prince with the silvery beard suddenly took note of him.
"Who are you? And what do you mean by bursting in on us?"
he demanded harshly.
"He is the knight that our good steward was expecting,"
the seated man said, smiling at Dunk in a way that suggested he had been aware of him all the time.
"You and I are the intruders here, brother. Come closer, sir."
Dunk edged forward, uncertain what was expected of him. He looked at Plummer, but got no help there. The pinch-faced steward who had been so forceful yesterday now stood silent, studying the stones of the floor.
"My lords," he said, "I asked Sir Manfred Dundarian to vouch for me so I might enter the lists, but he refuses. He says he knows me not. Sir Rollin served him, though, I swear it. I have his sword and shield. I—"
"A shield and a sword do not make a knight,"
declared Lord Ashford, a big bald man with a round red face.
"Plummer has spoken to me of you. Even if we accept that these arms belong to this Sir Arlen of Penitry, it may well be that you found him dead and stole them. Unless you have some better proof of what you say, some writing or—"
"I remember Sir Arlen of Penitry," the man in the high seat said quietly. "He never won a tourney that I know, but he never shamed himself either. At King's Landing 16 years ago, he overthrew Lord Stokeworth and the bastard of Harrenhal in the melee. And many years before at Lannisport, he unhorsed the Grey Lion himself. The lion was not so grey then, to be sure."
"He told me about that many a time,"
said Dunk. The tall man studied him.
"Then you will remember the Grey Lion's true name, I have no doubt."
For a moment there was nothing in Dunk's head at all.
1,000 times the old man had told that tale. 1,000 times, the lion, his name, his name, his name.
He was near despair when suddenly it came.
"Sir Daemon Lannister," he shouted.
"The Grey Lion, he's Lord of Casterly Rock now."
"So he is," said the tall man pleasantly. "And he enters the lists on the morrow."
He rattled the sheaf of papers in his hand.
"How can you possibly remember some insignificant hedge knight who chanced to unhorse Daemon Lannister 16 years ago?
Said the prince with the silver beard, frowning.
"I make it a practice to learn all I can of my foes."
"Why would you deign to joust with a hedge knight?"
"It was 9 years past at Storm's End. Lord Baratheon held a hastelude to celebrate the birth of a grandson. The lots made Sir Arlen my opponent in the first tilt.
We broke four lances before I finally unhorsed him.
Seven,
insisted Dunk.
And that was against the Prince of Dragonstone.
No sooner were the words out than he wanted them back.
Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall,
he could hear the old man chiding.
So it was.
The prince with the broken nose smiled gently.
Tales grow in the telling, I know. Do not think ill of your old master. But it was four lances only, I fear.
Dunk was grateful that the hall was dim. He knew his ears were red.
My lord!
No, that's wrong too.
Your grace!
He fell to his knees and lowered his head.
As you say, four. I meant no... I never... The old man, Sir Arlen, he used to say I was thick as a castle wall and slow as an oryx.
And strong as an oryx, by the look of you, said Baylor Breakspear. No harm was done, sir. Rise.
Dunk got to his feet, wondering if he should keep his head down or if he was allowed to look a prince in the face.
I am speaking with Baylor Targaryen, Prince of Dragonstone, Hand of the King, and heir apparent to the Iron Throne of Aegon the Conqueror. What could a hedge knight dare say to such a person?
You gave him back his horse and armor and took no ransom. I remember,
he stammered.
The old Sir Arlen, he told me you were the soul of chivalry, and that one day the Seven Kingdoms would be safe in your hands.
Not for many a year still, I pray, Prince Baylor said.
No,
said Dunk, horrified. He almost said, I didn't mean that the king should die, but stopped himself in time.
I am sorry, my lord. Your grace, I mean.
Belatedly, he recalled that the stocky man with the silver beard had addressed Prince Baylor as brother.
He is blood of the dragon as well. Damn me for a fool.
He could only be Prince Maekar, the youngest of King Darren's four sons. Prince Ares was bookish, and Prince Ragel, mad, meek, and sickly. Neither was like to cross half the realm to attend a tourney, but Maekar was said to be a redoubtable warrior in his own right, though ever in the shadow of his eldest brother.
You wish to enter the lists, is that it?
Asked Prince Baylor.
That decision rests with the master of the games, but I see no reason to deny you.
The steward inclined his head.
As you say, my lord.
Dunk tried to stammer out thanks, but Prince Maekar cut him off.
Very well, sir, you are grateful. Now be off with you.
You must forgive my noble brother, sir, said Prince Baylor. Two of his sons have gone astray on their way here, and he fears for them.
The spring rains have swollen many of the streams,
said Dunk.
Perhaps the princes are only delayed.
I did not come here to take counsel from a hedge knight,
Prince Maekar declared to his brother.
You may go, sir,
Prince Baylor told Dunk, not unkindly.
Yes, my lord.
He bowed and turned. But before he could get away, the prince called after him.
Sir, one thing more. You are not of Sir Arlen's blood?
Yes, my lord. I'm not.
The prince nodded at the battered shield Dunk carried and the winged chalice upon its face.
By law, only a true-born son is entitled to inherit a knight's arms. You must needs find a new device, sir, a sigil of your own.
I will,
said Dunk.
Thank you again, your grace. I will fight bravely. You'll see.
As brave as Baylor Breakspear,
the old man would often say. The wine sellers and sausage makers were doing a brisk trade, and whores walked brazenly among the stalls and pavilions. Some were pretty enough, one red-haired girl in particular. He could not help staring at her breasts, the way they moved under her loose shift as she sauntered past. He thought of the silver in his pouch.
I could have her if I liked. She'd like the clink of my coin well enough. I could take her back to my camp and have her all night if I wanted.
He had never lain with a woman, and for all he knew he might die in his first tilt. Tourneys could be dangerous, but whores could be dangerous too. The old man had warned him of that.
She might rob me while I slept, and what would I do then?
When the red-haired girl glanced back over her shoulder at him, Dunk shook his head and walked away. He found Egg at the puppet show, sitting cross-legged on the ground with the hood of his cloak pulled all the way forward to hide his baldness. The boy had been afraid to enter the castle, which Dunk put down to equal parts shyness and shame. He does not think himself worthy to mingle with lords and ladies, let alone great princes. It had been the same with him when he was little. The world beyond Flea Bottom had seemed as frightening as it was exciting. Egg needs time, that's all. For the present, it seemed kinder to give the lad a few coppers and let him enjoy himself among the stalls than to drag him along unwilling into the castle. This morning, the puppeteers were doing the tale of Florian and Jonquil. The fat Dornish woman was working Florian in his armor made of motley, while the tall girl held Jonquil's strings.
"You are no knight," she was saying as the puppet's mouth moved up and down. "I know you. You are Florian the Fool."
"I am, my lady,"
the other puppet answered, kneeling.
"As great a fool as ever lived, and as great a knight as well."
"A fool and a knight?"
said Jonquil.
"I have never heard of such a thing."
"Sweet lady,"
said Florian,
"all men are fools and all men are knights where women are concerned."
It was a good show, sad and sweet both, with a sprightly sword fight at the end, and a nicely painted giant. When it was over, the fat woman went among the crowd to collect coins, while the girl packed away the puppets. Dunk collected Egg and went up to her.
"My lord,"
she said, with a sideways glance and a half-smile. She was a head shorter than he was, but still taller than any other girl he had ever seen.
"That was good,"
Egg enthused.
"I like how you make them move, Jonquil and the dragon and all. I saw a puppet show last year, but they moved all jerky. Yours are more smooth."
"Thank you,"
she told the boy politely. Dunk said,
"Your figures are well carved, too. The dragon especially, a fearsome beast. You make them yourself?"
She nodded.
"My uncle does the carving. I paint them."
"Could you paint something for me? I have the coin to pay."
He slipped the shield off his shoulder and turned it to show her.
"I need to paint something over the chalice."
The girl glanced at the shield and then at him.
"What would you want painted?"
Dunk had not considered that. If not the old man's winged chalice, what? His head was empty.
"Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall." I'm not certain.
His ears were turning red, he realized miserably.
"You must think me an utter fool."
She smiled.
"All men are fools, and all men are knights."
"What color paint do you have?"
he asked, hoping that might give him an idea.
"I can mix paints to make any color you want."
The old man's brown had always seemed drab to Dunk.
"The field should be the color of sunset," he said suddenly. "The old man liked sunsets, and the device."
"An elm tree?"
said Egg.
"A big elm tree, like the one by the pool, with a brown trunk and green branches."
"Yes,"
Dunk said.
"That would serve. An elm tree, but with a shooting star above. Could you do that?"
The girl nodded.
"Give me the shield. I'll paint it this very night and have it back to you on the morrow."
Dunk handed it over.
"I am called Sir Duncan the Tall."
"I'm Tanzel,"
she laughed.
"Tanzel Too Tall, the boys used to call me."
"You're not too tall," Dunk blurted out.
"You're just right for..."
He realized what he had been about to say and blushed furiously.
"For,"
said Tanzel, cocking her head inquisitively.
"Puppets,"
he finished lamely. The first day of the tourney dawned bright and clear. Dunk bought a sackful of foodstuffs, so they were able to break their fast on goose eggs, fried bread, and bacon. But when the food was cooked, he found he had no appetite. His belly felt hard as a rock, even though he knew he would not ride today. The rite of first challenge would go to knights of higher birth and greater renown, to lords and their sons and champions from other tourneys.
Egg chattered all through their breakfast, talking of this man and that man and how they might fare.
"He was not japing me when he said he knew every good knight in the Seven Kingdoms," Dunk thought ruefully. He found it humbling to listen so intently to the words of a scrawny orphan boy, but Egg's knowledge might serve him should he face one of these men in a tilt. The meadow was a churning mass of people, all trying to elbow their way closer for a better view. Dunk was as good an elbower as any, and bigger than most. He squirmed forward to a rise 6 yards from the fence. When Egg complained that all he could see were asses, Dunk sat the boy on his shoulders. Across the field, the viewing stand was filling up with high-born lords and ladies, a few rich townfolk, and a score of knights who had decided not to compete today. Of Prince Makar, he saw no sign, but he recognized Prince Baelor at Lord Ashford's side. Sunlight flashed golden off the shoulder clasp that held his cloak and the slim coronet about his temples, but otherwise, he dressed far more simply than most of the other lords.
"He does not look like a Targaryen in truth, with that dark hair," Dunk said as much to Egg.
"It said he favors his mother,"
the boy reminded him.
"She was a Dornish princess."
The five champions had raised their pavilions at the north end of the lists, with the river behind them. The smallest two were orange, and the shields hung outside their doors displayed the white sun and chevron. Those would be Lord Ashford's sons, Andro and Robert, brothers to the fair maid. Dunk had never heard other knights speak of their prowess, which meant they would likely be the first to fall. Beside the orange pavilions stood one of deep-dyed green, much larger. The golden rose of Highgarden flapped above it, and the same device was emblazoned on the great green shield outside the door.
"That's Leo Tyrell, Lord of Highgarden," said Egg.
"I knew that," said Dunk, irritated.
"The old man and I served at Highgarden before you were ever born."
He hardly remembered that year himself, but Sir Arlen had often spoken of Leo Longthorn, as he was sometimes called, a peerless jouster, for all the silver in his hair.
"That must be Lord Leo beside the tent, the slender greybeard in green and gold."
"Yes," said Egg. "I saw him at King's Landing once. He's not one you'll want to challenge, sir."
"Boy, I do not require your counsel on who to challenge."
The fourth pavilion was sewn together from diamond-shaped pieces of cloth, alternating red and white. Dunk did not know the colors, but Egg said they belonged to a knight from the Vale of Arryn named Sir Humphrey Harding.
"He won a great melee at Maidenpool last year, sir, and overthrew Sir Donal of Duskendale and the Lords Arryn and Royce and the lists."
The last pavilion was Prince Valar's. Of black silk it was, with a line of pointed scarlet pennons hanging from its roof like long red flames. The shield on its stand was glossy black, emblazoned with the three-headed dragon of House Targaryen. One of the Kingsguard knights stood beside it, his shining white armor stark against the black of the tent cloth. Seeing him there, Dunk wondered whether any of the challengers would dare to touch the dragon shield. Valar was the king's grandson, after all, and son to Baelor Breakspear. He need not have worried. When the horns blew to summon the challengers, all five of the maid's champions were called forth to defend her. Dunk could hear the murmur of excitement in the crowd as the challengers appeared, one by one, at the south end of the lists. Heralds boomed out the name of each knight in turn. They paused before the viewing stand to dip their lances in salute to Lord Ashford, Prince Baelor, and the fair maid, then circled to the north end of the field to select their opponents. The Grey Lion of Casterly Rock struck the shield of Lord Tyrell, while his golden-haired heir, Sir Tybalt Lannister, challenged Lord Ashford's eldest son. Lord Tully of River Run tapped the diamond-patterned shield of Sir Humphrey Harding. Sir Abelard Hightower knocked upon Valar's, and the younger Ashford was called out by Sir Lionel Baratheon, the young knight they called the Laughing Storm. The challengers trotted back to the south end of the lists to await their foes. Sir Abelard in silver and smoke colors,
a stone watchtower on his shield, crowned with fire. The two Lannisters, all crimson, bearing the golden lion of Casterly Rock. The Laughing Storm shining in cloth of gold, with a black stag on breast and shield and a rack of iron antlers on his helm. Lord Tully wearing a striped blue and red cloak, clasped with a silver trout at each shoulder. They pointed their 12-foot lances skyward, the gusty wind snapping and tugging at the pennons. At the north end of the field, squires held brightly barded destriers for the champions to mount. They donned their helms and took up lance and shield in splendor the equal of their foes, the Ashfords' billowing orange silks, Sir Humphrey's red and white diamonds, Lord Leo on his white charger with green satin trappings, patterned with golden roses, and, of course, Valar Targaryen. The young prince's horse was black as night, to match the color of his armor, lance, shield, and trappings. Atop his helm was a gleaming three-headed dragon, wings spread, enameled in a rich red. Its twin was painted upon the glossy black surface of his shield. Each of the defenders had a wisp of orange silk knotted about an arm, a favor bestowed by the fair maid. As the champions trotted into position, Ashford Meadow grew almost still. Then a horn sounded, and stillness turned to tumult in half a heartbeat. 10 pairs of gilded spurs drove into the flanks of 10 great war horses. 1,000 voices began to scream and shout. 40 iron-shod hooves pounded and tore the grass. 10 lances dipped and steadied. The field seemed almost to shake, and champions and challengers came together in a rending crash of wood and steel. In an instant, the riders were beyond each other, wheeling about for another pass. Lord Tully reeled in his saddle, but managed to keep his seat. When the commons realized that all 10 of the lances had broken, the great roar of approval went up. It was a splendid omen for the success of the tourney, and a testament to the skill of the competitors. Squires handed fresh lances to the jousters to replace the broken ones they cast aside, and once more the spurs dug deep. Dunk could feel the earth trembling beneath the soles of his feet. Atop his shoulders, Egg shouted happily and waved his pipe-stem arms. The young prince passed nearest to them. Dunk saw the point of his black lance kiss the watchtower on his foe's shield and slide off to slam into his chest, even as Sir Abelard's own lance burst into splinters against Valar's breastplate. The gray stallion in the silver and smoke trappings reared with the force of the impact, and Sir Abelard Hightower was lifted from his stirrups and dashed violently to the ground. Lord Tully was down as well, unhorsed by Sir Humphrey Harding, but he sprang up at once and drew his longsword, and Sir Humphrey cast aside his lance, unbroken, and dismounted to continue their fight afoot. Sir Abelard was not so sprightly. His squire ran out, loosened his helm, and called for help, and 2 serving men lifted the dazed knight by the arms to help him back to his pavilion. Elsewhere on the field, the 6 knights who had remained a horse were riding their 3rd course. More lances shattered, and this time Lord Leo Tyrell aimed his point so expertly he ripped the gray lion's helm cleanly off his head. Barefaced, the Lord of Casterly Rock raised his hand in salute and dismounted, yielding the match. By then, Sir Humphrey had beaten Lord Tully into surrender, showing himself as skilled with a sword as he was with a lance. Tybalt Lannister and Andro Ashford rode against each other thrice more before Sir Andro finally lost shield, seat, and match all at once. The younger Ashford lasted even longer, breaking no less than 9 lances against Sir Lionel Baratheon, the Laughing Storm. Champion and challenger both lost their saddles on their 10th course, only to rise together to fight on, sword against mace. Finally, a battered Sir Robert Ashford admitted defeat, but on the viewing stand his father looked anything but dejected. Both Lord Ashford's sons had been ushered from the ranks of the champions, it was true, but they had acquitted themselves nobly against 2 of the finest knights in the 7 kingdoms.
"I must do even better, though," Dunk thought as he watched victor and vanquished embrace and walk together from the field. "It is not enough for me to fight well and lose. I must win at least the first challenge, or I lose all." Sir Tybalt Lannister and the Laughing Storm would now take their places among the champions, replacing the men they had defeated. Already the orange pavilions were coming down. A few feet away, the young prince sat at his ease in a raised camp chair before his great black tent. His helm was off. He had dark hair like his father, but a bright streak ran through it. A serving man brought him a silver goblet, and he took a sip.
Walter, if he is wise,
Dunk thought,
wine, if not.
He found himself wondering if Valar had indeed inherited a measure of his father's prowess, or whether it had only been that he had drawn the weakest opponent. A fanfare of trumpets announced that three new challengers had entered the lists. The heralds shouted their names.
Sir Perce of House Carron, Lord of the Marches.
He had a silver harp emblazoned on his shield, though his surcoat was patterned with nightingales.
Sir Joseph of House Malister from Seaguard.
Sir Joseph sported a winged helm. On his shield, a silver eagle flew across an indigo sky.
Sir Gawain of House Swan, Lord of Stonehelm on the Cape of Wrath.
A pair of swans, one black and one white, fought furiously on his arms. Lord Gawain's armor, cloak, and horse bardings were a riot of black and white as well, down to the stripes on his scabbard and lance. Lord Carron, harper and singer and knight of renown, touched the point of his lance to Lord Tyrell's rose. Sir Joseph thumped on Sir Humphrey Harding's diamonds, and the black and white knight, Lord Gawain Swan, challenged the black prince with the white guardian. Dunk rubbed his chin. Lord Gawain was even older than the old man, and the old man was dead.
Egg, who is the least dangerous of these challengers?
He asked the boy on his shoulders, who seemed to know so much of these knights.
Lord Gawain,
the boy said at once.
Valar's foe.
Prince Valar, he corrected. A squire must keep a courteous tongue, boy.
The three challengers took their places as the three champions mounted up. Men were making wagers all around them and calling out encouragement to their choices, but Dunk had eyes only for the prince. On the first pass, he struck Lord Gawain's shield a glancing blow, the blunted point of the lance sliding aside just as it had with Sir Abelard Hightower, only this time it was deflected the other way, into empty air. Lord Gawain's own lance broke clean against the prince's chest, and Valar seemed about to fall for an instant before he recovered his seat. The second time through the lists, Valar swung his lance left, aiming for his foe's breast, but struck his shoulder instead. Even so, the blow was enough to make the older knight lose his lance. One arm flailed for balance, and Lord Gawain fell. The young prince swung from the saddle and drew his sword, but the fallen man waved him off and raised his visor.
I yield, your grace, he called. Well fought.
The lords in the viewing stand echoed him, shouting,
well fought, well fought,
as Valar knelt to help the gray-haired lord to his feet.
It was not either,
Egg complained.
Be quiet, or you can go back to camp.
Farther away, Sir Joseph Malister was being carried off the field unconscious, while the Harp Lord and the Rose Lord were going at each other lustily with blunted long axes, to the delight of the roaring crowd. Dunk was so intent on Valar Targaryen that he scarcely saw them.
He is a fair knight, but no more than that, he found himself thinking. I would have a chance against him. If the gods were good, I might even unhorse him, and once afoot my weight and strength would tell. Get him!
Egg shouted merrily, shifting his seat on Dunk's back in his excitement.
Get him! Hit him! Yes! He's right there! He's right there!
It seemed to be Lord Carron he was cheering on. The harper was playing a different sort of music now, driving Lord Leo back and back as steel sang on steel. The crowd seemed almost equally divided between them, so cheers and curses mingled freely in the morning air. Chips of wood and paint were flying from Lord Leo's shield as Lord Perce's axe knocked the petals off his golden rose, one by one, until the shield finally shattered and split. But as it did, the axe head hung up for an instant in the wood, and Lord Leo's own axe crashed down on the haft of his foe's weapon.